returned. In an earlier episode, we launched our continuing exploration into idioms. This is the next episode of Idiomatic for the People.
Come on, knock on my door. Idiomatic for you. Something, something about people and phrases and dun-dun. And we got to workshop that.
Yeah.
No, Ben, you pointed out, though, that the Three's Company theme, kind of dirty.
Clearly not as innocent as the melody would imply,
that's
Noel.
Right.
And this is something that we should look back into because I know that you and I and our super producer, Casey Pegram, had a fantastic time tripping the light of music history in our Louie Louie episode. So maybe we can look at sitcom theme songs one day.
Are you trying to make Trip the Light happen, Ben?
No, but I was thinking about making Cast the Pod fantastic.
Gretchen.
There you go.
Gretchen,
it's
never going to happen.
That could be a whole new thing. Hey, well, we hear voices. Hear who are these voices, Ben? We've got voices.
That's right.
They're not just the ones in our heads.
No, no. It's not just you and Casey and myself today. We are rejoined by our good friends, Rowan Newby and Frank Mulheron.
Hey.
Mahalo.
Guys, thanks for
staying. Was that a well hello or a mahalo?
Both.
Okay. Both. I'm fine with that.
Multifunctional. So we are we're really glad that you guys didn't give up the ghost. That's another idiom. Didn't give up the ghost at intermission.
Spooky.
And came back. So thanks so much for giving us a second date. We've established the rules of Idiomatic for the People already.
I almost tapped out myself, Ben.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You've had a long day, my friend.
It's been a long journey. I was telling super producer Casey Pegram that I did get good sleep last night. I went to bed like a good boy at around 9, woke up at 4:30. But it's not about the lack of sleep. It's just about the length of the day. When you're up at 4, it feels like an eternity. But I'm kind of liking this punchy vibe that I'm riding. Now, I'm hoping that it'll lend itself to some fun, idiomatic dissection.
I am 100% agreed with you, and I have just been struck by inspiration. Noel, will you be the first brave soul to explore an idiom with us today?
I would love to, Benjamin. My idiom is the name of a Spice Girl. Can you guess which one it is?
Is it scary?
The story? The story is a little bit scary. It does involve some sport, some potential sport, some sports, sporty individuals.
Mm-hmm. It's not a baby,
What are the other ones? There's baby. Baby. There may be some babies in the story here.
Sure.
There's Baby Spice.
Ginger?
I think
scary
I know
spice,
it.
Ginger Spice.
Was she Ginger Spice? Or wasn't she?
There was Ginger Spice.
Yeah, I don't know.
Ginger is a spice, I think is what you mean.
Ginger is a spice.
Multiple levels.
And
yeah, so many levels.
The story of the Spice Girl in question, or at least her namesake, does involve some spices, potentially.
Turmeric.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. Aha.
Cumin.
It involves a journey to India. To the land of Asia, the land of exotic spices.
My
right?
favorite.
Like turmeric.
Sure.
Like,
peppercorns also.
Peppercorns, yeah. That's right. But it's not just any journey, my friend. Mm. It is the journey of the wealthy via steamship. You see, in the late 19th and early 20th century, it was the thing to do for the well-to-do, the wealthy, the upper crust of England to go to India. For what they call in England a holiday, which means vacation, right?
Oh.
Or it's also a fabulous Madonna song. Wouldn't that be funny? So there's a Go-Go song called Vacation, and then there's a Madonna song called Holiday. And they're both about Madonna's song about holiday is about taking a holiday.
Yeah.
If we took a holiday, just some time to celebrate. No, I think she's more talking about like a Christmas-type experience.
Sure.
She's talking about celebrating.
Well, as long as you wake me up before you go.
Oh, you know I will, Rowan Newby. Okay. You know I will. Listen
when
here,
September
though.
Ends.
Listen here, my friend. So they have to take this journey on steamship. And here's the thing. In those days, it was not a good look for the wealthy to have a tan. Because the tan was not what it is today where people, you know, get literally spray painted on their body so they look, they have that like glow. No, that was the look that was reserved for like a field hand. Mm. That was considered like what we would call like a redneck or something like that. Someone that's like the lowest of the low. And these wealthy types wanted to maintain their ghostly complexion.
Mm.
So here's the thing. The story of the word posh. That is my word. That was a long preamble to get there, I know. But Ben, you know I love a good acronym.
That's true.
You know this about me. Frank, you know this about me. I'm always talking about acronyms at the house.
It's like the main thing. It's crazy.
I won't shut up. I'm like, acronym. Yet I can't seem to think of one.
We get it. Yeah, so it's like name some.
Radar. Race car.
That's not.
Race car is it's a palindrome.
Palindrome.
Yeah. Not an acronym.
Just want to chime in here. One of my favorite palindromes, Dr. Awkward.
Really?
Whoa. Wow.
Beautiful.
Also one of my favorite Spider-Man villains.
Mm-hmm. No, wait a second.
I know.
My favorite is a lonely Tylenol.
Wow, that's a good one.
Yeah.
But palindromes may be something for a different tale, right?
Did you know that the word palindrome is itself a palindrome?
I'm pretty sure it might be in some other language.
Okay, that's fair. So I'll tell you, the story of the word posh is really fascinating because there is a popularly circulated, let's call it, I don't know, a rumored origin of this word, that these mucky-muck English types that were going on their holiday to India via steamship required a very particular type of seat so they would not get that tan. So they wanted to sit in the part of the ship that would shield them from the afternoon sun, which is the hottest of the hot during the day when you're out on the open sea, which would, according to this version of events, be the right or the starboard side. And then when you came back, they wanted it to be on the left or the port side. So therein you have the acronym POSH, port side out, starboard home. Meaning on the voyage there, you'd sit on the port side. On the voyage back, you'd sit on the starboard side. And supposedly, according to this tale, these tickets would be stamped with posh. And it got so popular that people just started asking for the posh ticket. We want the posh ticket.
How posh.
Turns out this is garbage. This story is not true.
What?
At all. And there's great reason. There's it's so garbage and so questionable that Snopes has a fantastic article dissecting all of these various versions of the story. And they have a couple of reasons that this does not make sense. First of all, the way the sun would move in a journey like this would be different depending on the day.
Right.
This is a very long and arduous journey. And you couldn't really bank on where the sun would be exactly.
Yeah, it makes its own rules.
It does make its own rules. And that's the thing. The winds, there were monsoon winds that would be in play, and they would change from season to season. So it would change seasonally, maybe not day to day, but certainly seasonally. And here's the other part. Here's the other rub, as they say, which is another idiom we should explore.
There it is.
Yeah, there it is right there. These trips were so long and difficult that they wouldn't book a round trip. They would be staying in India for a long time to make it worth their while. They might stay months. Some might even stay for like a year or so. They would not book that return trip until they knew damn well they were ready to come home.
It's very posh of them.
It's so posh. And so the real origin of the word posh came around in 1830. And the thing about posh, too, is the reason stories like this can take hold is because its origins are a little bit murky, but there are some origins in the Romani language of the early 17th century where it was a term that meant money. The term was posh huri, which was their version of a halfpence. So then the word posh kind of stuck around and started to mean money. Money equals you are so money, you are so well-to-do, you are so posh. That makes a lot of sense to me. And now we use that term to mean anyone that is moneyed or looking fancy or looking like whatever their getup is would have cost a good bit, you know?
So yeah, that's amazing. I have to admit, it was a little bit of an emotional roller coaster for me, Noel, because I got quite into the idea of Posh Spice's full name being Port Side Out, Starboard Home Spice.
That would be good. That would be good. And a point that I love the Snopes article makes is that the Brits of this period, and honestly humans in general, big fans of scrapbooking. Scrapbooking was a super fashionable thing to do. Ooh. And not a single one of these posh stamped tickets exists in the world.
Busted. Whoa. It's debunked.
Yeah. So, yeah, totally debunked.
But the Brits love to say posh. That's probably where I know the term from.
Of course. You're a posh dandy, you know? Exactly. You're like a posh dandy tripping the light fantastic.
There we go.
I like that line from Peep Show where it's like, he calls him a posh spaz. You probably iron your socks.
That's right.
Yes. Exactly. Also, I propose that we take it upon ourselves to bring back posh as a slang term for money. There's always, there's so many. I think you can, I think you can pull it off and no one will bust you. You know what I mean? Like, if you say, how much posh is that? They'll just say it's $4.35. You know?
I think that works totally. There's some, like, you ever heard of, like, scratch? You ever heard of someone calling money scratch?
Sure. Mm-hmm. Cheddar.
Posh is way cooler.
Yeah, posh is way cooler.
You got the posh?
Definitely more of a fashionable.
Sounds like something Ali G would say.
That's the posh.
You would say.
Booyah kasha.
Exactly.
Booyah pasha. Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, boy. Yeah. All right.
Come
well,
on.
That's good. Now we turn to, let's see, what you got something, Frank? You got one for us?
Sure. I was looking at what's cracking in. What's cracking in on tonight? Do y'all have what's cracking? Do y'all have any idea of what's going on?
Like some what's the haps?
Yeah,
haps?
What's the haps? Yeah. What's the buzz? What's the
cracking?
You know, what's the new gossip? Sure.
What's the 411?
Yeah. And so I was looking into this, and, you know, it's not something that's native to America, but it's been around in England for a while, and specifically it comes from the Ulster area and the Scots-Irish area of the British Isles. And originally it was spelled, you know, like the way we spell it now, like C-R-A-C-K.
So that was American then? It was an Americanized version or no?
Well, no. It was originally started out in as Middle English, and it was just it was related to the sound, but in this particular usage of it, it pertained to like a lot of chatter, basically, like people, you know, you go into a loud bar or restaurant and you hear just, you know,
white noise.
Yeah.
I believe they call them pubs over there.
Yeah.
So a merry cacophony.
Yes, exactly. And so,
very nice, Ben.
What I found really interesting about this was that it's an example of a reborrowing. So it was primarily used in, you know, Scotland, Northern England, and in Northern Ireland. It really wasn't used in Ireland, even though we associate, you know, when people say, where's the crack or what's the crack?
That is not what I think of. When people say, where's the crack, I'm thinking of something completely different.
Oh, yeah, totally. But, but say if you were in Ireland and somebody asked you that, you know, they would just take you to a cool bar or, you know, restaurant or whatever.
And then sell you some crack.
Sell you some crack, and then you'd continue about your night.
Good.
So crack's use in mainland Ireland or the non-Northern Ireland part really is more of a recent thing and kind of started in the late 60s. And what happened was they took crack and Gaelicized it and started to spell it C-R-A-I-C.
Hmm.
You know, so they don't have a K in Gaelic, and I don't know why they chose to put an I in front of the
That's penis. What I'm saying. It looks like a more Middle English version. Like, sure. I would think of it like, you know, the craic was in the whiskey and the leapy deeves and all that kind of
we
stuff.
We hopped over to the craic.
Yeah, exactly.
It's got a Jabberwocky vibe to it as well.
Really in the Sleevey Toots.
Yes. Yeah. The gyre and gimble. So I wonder if it's related to archaic in any way, just because of that AI.
It's just an example of the Irish taking this word and giving it a more Gaelic sort of rebranding. Mm-hmm. And that's really kind of like what it turns into, because it turns into this Gaelic spelling of it, and it becomes associated with Irish nightlife, culture, and just going out and having fun and raising hell and all that kind of stuff. And then it ends up coming back into English by way of Ireland, and it kind of now means like fun, nightlife, gossip, and all this kind of stuff, but with the kind of Irish flavor to it.
So are we having crack now? Is this what we're doing?
I'd like to hope so. I hope so, for real.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Is that how you would say it too? We're having crack?
Yeah, we're having a crack. And
having a crack?
I feel very
strange.
Very fake, say, like, if, because I went
having
to,
a good crack.
Yeah, I went to Dublin last year, and what surprised me is I had heard people use this phrase, but I had no idea what it meant. And I was never in a situation where I wanted to stop someone and be like, pardon me, fellow Irish person. You know what I mean? What is this crack of which you speak?
Take a crack.
And where can I get some? I'm sorry I keep leaning on that, but it's I can't unhear that. So to me, what comes to mind is what's cracking.
Yes.
Sure.
And I also, another popular British expression is a cracking good time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
If you're saying that's cracking good, you know, that is, I think it just means that it's super exciting and fun and upbeat. High energy.
Yeah, totally. And one interesting thing I came across with this is that it's kind of, now that it's become readopted by English speakers, it's now kind of like seen as kind of like emblematic of the Disneyfication of Irish culture. You saw like the proliferation of like Irish pubs in the 90s, you know, and that
Tipsy McStumbles.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, I didn't make that up. In Frank and I's hometown of Augusta, Georgia, which you mentioned last episode, there is an Irish bar that's sort of like an Irish bar Hooters called Tipsy McStumbles.
Wow.
If that's not the most offensive cultural appropriation that I can think of off the top of my head, I don't know what it is.
You know, there are a lot of really cool examples of reborrowing that I thought were really interesting, you know, like, you know, how like animation in English and then in Japan there's anime and then now in English animation that's from Japan or
you mean Japanimation?
Nobody says
you're
that.
You're not supposed to say that. That will get you punched by fans of the medium.
Yeah. So it's come full circle back to anime.
So I have a question. Can we as Americans use this phrase, or are we being jerks?
I would, if I was going over there, I would be like, "Listen, I don't want this Mickey Mouse, Donald Duck crack. You know, I'm looking for the real thing. You know, don't send me to where the tourists are."
I feel like you're
not into Donald Duck crack either, personally.
Oh my goodness,
not
gracious.
My crack.
Last thing, real quick. Yeah. I keep seeing this on the internet when I'm looking at this. The crack was 90. Why isn't it 100?
Yes,
why is it only 90?
That is the highest gradation of crack.
Keep it 90.
It's like that Breaking Bad level crack.
If you go past crack 90, then you've entered into minus crack, where you've had too good of a time.
And
you know, you said some terrible things and gotten into a fight. And,
Bloody minus crack.
Your friends have canceled you.
They'll cancel you. You were canceled this season.
That's right.
Frank, you were so minus crack.
That was fantastic. I first of all, when you texted the group saying that, I thought you were misspelling a word. And I was like, I don't know what this is. But I am delighted. I literally learned something new.
Yeah, I didn't want to mention it in our off-air talks because I thought you would like have more fun.
So you knew about it. You knew what it was.
Yeah, because people talk about it in Dublin.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I actually, when we were there, we ended up entirely through accident staying next to the most notorious club in Dublin, which is a place called Copper-Faced Jack's. I don't want to go too far into detail on it. But if you are by a computer that is not associated with your work, feel free to Google it and check out what happens at Copper-Faced Jack's. I hear it's raging crack. It's at 90. Am I doing that right?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
nice. Rapid.
Crack 90.
Crack 90. We should do. There's some t-shirt ideas here, guys. These are t-shirt ideas.
Write in. Let us know.
Yeah. I'll wear any t-shirt with crack on it.
That's what people say about you.
Yeah.
I have one, you guys. It might surprise you. Have you ever felt that you were doing something or involved in some kind of project that felt too improvised, somewhat haphazard?
Like this podcast?
No, we had a plan.
We had a text. We had a text
we
thread.
We had a text thread. So
irreverence is the name of the game.
Yes, sure. More loosey-goosey than this is what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. And not loosey-goosey, but... But that's a great one, too.
That's true. That's close. True.
The phrase willy-nilly, which is for older generations.
What? No, I'm sorry. Just willy-nilly, loosey-goosey. They're both similar sing-songy.
So sing-songy. Yeah.
They've got some whimsy to them, right? They're a bit jejune. But willy-nilly now it's something you would associate with, let's be honest, maybe a child, a teacher, or an older person, say, in a way, like if you've ever seen a very wholesome person get angry, they would use a phrase like willy-nilly. Like, you cannot be out all hours of the night driving willy-nilly hither and yon.
Hither and thither, even.
Yes, yes.
Pell-mell.
So nowadays, in 2019, we associate this with the definition that I think we all recognized instantly. Doing something without a good set of directions, lackluster planning, somewhat haphazardly, which reminds us, I feel terrible, super producer Casey Pegram. We went willy-nilly into the beginning of this podcast.
We ran roughshod over our normal top of the show shout out to Casey.
Yes. Please our do forgive Casey. Us. Yes, we are penitent.
I blame you, Rowan.
What? Yes. Come on.
We blame Rowan.
No. I'm sorry. Casey, do you forgive me?
I forgive you.
Oh, listen to that, huh?
Casey on the case.
Yeah, and it sounded very sincere, so why don't you guys need to take a deep breath? All right, we're good.
So willy-nilly is much older than you might originally suspect. The phrase that survives now, willy-nilly, is the winner of a long battle between various different spellings in... It's even become a great fake name, if you guys are into those. William Nilliam. Is that who's going to use that at the airport next?
Right? Every hotel I stay at.
Every hotel. So the early meaning of the word nil is key to the understanding. It used to mean originally with or against your will. So come hell or high water is closer to the original version of willy-nilly. Because the early meaning of the word nil, it was the opposite of will, a contraction of nay will.
So, oh, my gosh. Yeah.
So
I'm blowing my mind.
So I nil do that. I will not do that.
Yeah. Webster's defines it as whether you like it or not.
Yep. And so—
I've always wanted to say Webster's defines it as. Sorry, I had to do it.
It's perfect.
Shout out to Webster's.
So— Will I, nil I, can be expanded into be I willing, be I unwilling, combining the two sentiments with the implication that it doesn't matter how you feel about it, you are stuck doing this thing. I got a lot of this information from one of my favorite word websites, which is World Wide Words. It is a treasure trove, a cavalcade of very, very strange phrases.
And an interesting backstory, the guy that that maintained it, right?
Yeah. He is no longer actively updating the site, but Michael Quinion has spent his entire life studying this. He's a one-man army, and it's fascinating, just the sheer bulk of stuff he describes. So shout out to you, Mike, and thanks for putting this together. So the phrase itself dates back at least 1,000 years. The earliest known version was in an old English text called Lives of Saints. The line is, "For in thee we sing, sainful and skill and bone aid mode, will we, nil we." I don't know what he's talking about.
But he got there willy-nilly.
I did. About skating and bone. What was it? Skanks and bones?
Sinful and skating? Stolen bone aid mode.
Ed mode. I'm in Ed mode.
Ed mode squad.
Bro, you're so Ed mode right
now.
I'm
so Ed mode right now. That's like when you like actively are sort of like a dweeb. Like I'm in full Ed mode.
Mm-hmm. And then it calls.
I don't know why. Ed, sorry to all the Eds out
no,
there.
No, this is great. These are going to be t-shirts. And then it occurs in the Taming of the Shrew in 1596 with its original meaning. Petruchio, speaking to Katharina, says, "Thus in plain terms, your father hath consented that you shall be my wife, your dowry agreed on, and will you, nil you, I will marry you." Super creepy, dude.
Wow. Yeah. That's not good. That's not a good look for Petruchio. What's his name?
That's right.
Oh, I got it.
You nailed it, man. And this is just a great example of how previously, maybe not sinister, but previously more combative or less innocuous terms become these fun things that we throw around now. You know what I mean? You're like the odds of you being in an altercation and someone saying, will you or nil you? in a threatening manner. That's just safely not going
to
happen.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I do have to say, Ben, I use this one quite a lot.
Ah, yeah. You
use it willy-nilly.
I use it willy-nilly.
Think about that.
Just every which way. Yeah, I really do. I really, really like willy-nilly.
Oh, come on.
I keep thinking of, what's that song, Willy Bully?
Willy Bully.
Yeah. I keep thinking of the song Willy Bully, but just with the lyrics replaced willy-nilly.
I like it.
Which actually works.
I do, but honestly, though, when I use it, though, I use it in kind of a Larry David, kind of like grumpy old man way, where I'm like, you can't just go doing this stuff willy-nilly, you know? Like, it's this idea of there's got to be a little order involved.
Yeah.
You can't just be going out,
doing whatever it is you're doing, whatever the case might be.
Who knows?
Can't be haphazard or pell-mell.
Pell-mell.
Yes, that's
which is
one.
So funny because they're cigarettes.
That. I was about to say
that are grandpa cigarettes. Yes. Who would also say willy-nilly probably. But grandpas pronounce it pell-mell. And if you look at the pack, it's clearly Paul Mall.
Yeah.
And they're still around. But apparently, they're like, that's one of these examples of willful disagreement of an obvious pronunciation.
Right.
You know, like, yeah. I love that.
Maybe they're just like, I'm going to smoke this as fast as possible. And
I don't have time to read the box.
A person with things to do.
Right.
So that's the story. So we have posh. We have crack. We took a crack at crack.
Yeah.
And then we have willy-nilly, but we weren't quite willy-nilly with this episode because we did have a plan. We did promise everyone in the beginning that we would each present an idiom. And Rowan, since you are an alumni of the show now, alumnus?
Alumner? Alum?
Aluminium?
Aluminium.
Since you are, in fact, built largely from aluminium. No.
That is correct. I'm a tin man.
We would like to give the honor to you. You have the last idiom. Now, this means that if the three of us have really dropped the ball here, I don't know where that one comes from, then it's no pressure on you to save the show.
Yeah, I don't feel pressured by that statement at all.
Good, because Nolan Frank gave you some serious nods, and I want you to know that we're not joking.
Okay. They all just cracked their knuckles, and they're looking at me very sternly. I want everyone to know. Can you hear those knuckles cracking?
Yeah.
Okay, so
that is not Foley. That is in the room.
Wow. Okay, well.
Ugh, I'm triggered
by
that sound.
I'm sweating bullets right now. Put that on your list, by the way.
There.
good, because I'm tripping balls right now.
Tripping the balls, fantastic. Got it. Yeah, there's actually a dry erase board behind Ben where he puts a tally of every accidental idiom we utter.
Ben literally keeps score in all things.
In all things.
Podcast-related.
I'm super petty. I'm kidding.
But sure, yeah, here we go. Let's jump in. This is a lesser-known idiom for the people out there. Harbuxing the runway. If you're not familiar with this, it refers to someone who's maybe showboating or peacocking a bit, maybe accidentally alienating a crowd as opposed to enlightening with their flair and mild superiority, but like big personality mostly.
I've heard this, but I have no idea where it comes from. Is it like a European thing or is it?
I think its origins are English, but I think English. So yeah, European.
Okay.
Wait a minute. English, you think? English. Did you do the homework?
I did the homework. Come on.
We are really picking on Rowan today.
Well, it is one of those expressions that feels fake, but I promise it's not.
So lay it on us, man. What's the etymology? Is there a story behind this?
Well, there's a man by the name of Alexander Benson, okay, who was the great-grandfather of somebody who I know, and Admiral Nicholas von Benson. Who has shared this wisdom with me. It evidently stems from old brigantine ships. And there was something called at the front of the ship is the bow and the back is the port, correct?
Or
no,
stern.
The port is the stern. Thank you. And so in the back of the ship is where you steer the ship. And if somebody was steering the ship, they would have this semblance of kind of arrogance. They'd be taking up a lot of, they're like, oh, I'm in control of this ship. So they were often known as the Harbucks. They were Harbucksing.
Oh, okay.
And the runway being like the passageway from the port or the starboard.
Oh, okay.
Stern.
All right. The stern is in the back, I'm saying. But when you look forward.
Ah, yes.
Because they get this whole, like, vista of the entire ship and the sea because they're steering the ship
forward. So they're sort of, like, hogging the spotlight a little bit.
Exactly, mm-hmm. Yeah. And they can be a little braggadocious, but they're doing their job, you know. I think it's kind of an unintentional type of Harbucks.
It's like flexing on the gram or something.
Sure, yeah.
So a more archaic version, perhaps?
Yes, why not? Very archaic.
Because I got to be honest, like, I haven't... I'm familiar with it. I'm sure a lot of us listening are, but I haven't heard it in the modern day. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, you know, much like willy-nilly, people aren't, or will to the nil or whatever it was, folks aren't using this as often as they should. You know, frankly, I'm a little upset that people are often try to call me on this, but it is real as the table we're in front of.
Right, we are not sitting down. We're standing in front of the table in a line.
Real as the table in front of us. You can put that on the tally board.
All right. So, do you think people should bring this back?
I strongly suggest it would be for the benefit of all. If we, because you got to call people on their BS. You know? Often, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, so Okay. Is any of this true?
Yeah.
All right.
What?
I don't know, man.
I wrote a bunch of other fake things. If you want me to read it.
Yes, yes.
I mean real things.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm still in.
Because I did actually Google the word Harbuck.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, it's what the internet's for, right?
Sure.
Okay. Harbuck could have ties to a Gaelic expression, Harbuck, which was a surname or habitational name taken from Arbuckle, a parish of Airdrie, Lancashire. I think I'm pronouncing that incorrectly, but it's Gaelic. Yes, fine.
Wow, really? That's Gaelic.
It's Gaelic.
So we've got crack and we came back around.
Exactly. We're back. And he was talking about ships at the beginning of the show.
Wow. Yeah.
Think about that.
It's almost as though.
I'm definitely usual suspects.
It's almost as though you invented, or I'm sorry, discovered the perfect crystallization of everything that we did in this episode, summed up in a completely believable and meticulously researched idiom.
I couldn't have said it better myself. I'm patting myself on the back.
You should.
However,
be, yeah.
Nicholas von Bensen, Admiral, deserves a large amount of the credit as well, I must say.
Was he the original Harbucks?
He was the original person to Harbucks the runway.
Now,
actually,
I have to say this. Wouldn't an admiral, he would just be commanding. He wouldn't be steering.
Well, he was kind of a dick about it.
Okay, that's fair.
Some people are really hands-on, you know?
Yeah.
So.
People, yeah, exactly. Because, yeah. There are shifts.
It's also a power move.
Exactly.
You know
Big
what I mean?
Big time.
Like, oh, you're an admiral, you want people to know you still got it.
Yeah. He would often just, like, shout, hey, guys, look at me. Hey, check out the steering on this guy, huh?
Got really good handling. Really good handling.
Yeah.
And then people
would be swabbing the poop deck like, that's nice, sir. That's great.
Well, you know what? I say we take this to our favorite court, because if anyone can get to the bottom of the veracity of this figure of speech, it will be our super producer, Casey Pegram. Casey, question for you. When was the last time you heard Harbucks in the runway?
I would estimate about an hour ago when we were talking about it outside before recording.
This is new to you.
It's a new one to me, but you know, it feels like it should be real. So it has that going for it.
What are you implying?
Should be real? Casey, I thought we were...
I mean, you know, all language is constructed, so... I mean, really, what is real versus fake?
Yeah, thank you. And that's actually something I texted Noel earlier.
That's very true.
And a threat.
No, you did. So be it true, will he, nil he, you know, I think it demonstrates the malleability of language and the power of belief, which is what we're all about here on Ridiculous History.
That is correct.
And it's like our main thing. It's our
malleability. It's our main thing.
It's one of our main things. So, guys, again, thank you so much for dropping by and helping shed some light on the mysteries of etymology. For those of us listening, we want to thank you for all the responses we received to our previous idiomatic for the people. Write in, let us know some of your favorite figures of speech, turns of phrase, idioms. Also, if you speak languages other than English, what's something that you think sounds really strange in English but is very common in some other language? That's an episode all its own.
There are some great ones. No.
Thanks to you, my dear friend, my dear old friend, Frank Mulheron, coiner of Idiomatic for the People, ephemeral friend of the show, and now, what's the opposite of ephemeral? Concrete?
Lasting?
Corporeal. Friend of the show. Part of the show. It's been a long time coming. Thanks for being here, man.
Thanks for having me.
I know you had to rush over here from work, and it means the world. Rowan Newby.
Yeah, thanks so much, Rowan. You can find Mr. Newby on his own show, Pitches, which is a comedy podcast about the evaluation of ideas.
Correct.
A panoply of ideas, right?
That is correct. Very good word. It's like Shark Tank minus all the stress and money and plus all the chatter and fun and irreverence and... Yeah, it's pretty off the cuff. I got Ben Bolin here actually coming up on an episode, and I got Noel Brown here on one that's airing today. How do you like them apples?
So you can check it out now wherever you find your favorite podcast.
That's correct. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all the things. You get on there, baby, at Pitches Podcast. Get it.
You can also find us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Meet one of our favorite parts of the show, your fellow listeners, on our Facebook page, Ridiculous Historians.
Big thanks to super producer Casey Pegram. Big thanks to our research associate, Gabe Luzier. And thanks to Alex Williams, who composed our ever-so-earwormy theme.
And as we said in previous episode, write it and let us know if there were any figures of speech or turns of phrase that we used unconsciously. I'm sure they were in there. You can find my personal Instagram at Ben Bolin. And hey, Noel, you're on the internet too.
Yeah, I'm on the internet at Embryonic Insider, double ats. It's the only way you can find it. I'm kidding. Just a single app.
Willy-nilly. Great crack, folks. Stay tuned for our next episode when we do something that we guarantee will be ridiculous.
Yeah, that's the least we can guarantee. We'll see you next time.